Mrs. E. Harrington, Reel 2.
Forward to it. I always wanted something better than I had, and I thought that India or seeing places would be lovely for the children. You must remember that we had never been anywhere important. We'd seen parts of England, but not important places. And to go abroad was an ideal existence. I mean, only the rich went abroad, didn't they? No matter how you went, they went abroad because they had money. You would never go to such a place because you wouldn't have any money. And you wouldn't possibly, nobody ever thought of going away. Not to France, Belgium, Germany or Holland or, well, they were just names. And this going to India was absolutely marvellous. And I remember that when we got to the Red Sea, Peter said to me, "Mummy, you never tell lies." I said, "No." He said, "Well, that is the Red Sea, you told me, and it's not red." And I said, "No." Well, that promptly stumped me because I didn't know where the Red Sea wasn't red, and I just went on to the story that the Israelites crossed it and then it all went back. But you see, it was things like that. I mean, you imagine, now we went up the Suez Canal. Well, you imagine looking out. I can remember this now as clear as if I it was yesterday. It was all sand and date palms and these dhows going up the canal and this beautiful sunset, absolutely exquisite. All orange and gold and red and purple. I'd never seen a sunset like it. And the stars, you could look up and you could almost pick them up. They were so beautiful. They were absolutely fantastic. And, well, where would a child of my mind get that education? People did say, not to me, but afterwards, "Oh, children need an education." But I think the actual practical education of taking them with you, because some of those wives, even army wives, left their children at home because India was supposed to be so hot it half killed you. But to me, I figured that a practical education was of much more value than sitting on this desk and getting it from a teacher from a map. And it proved right, because although they only had army teachers and they weren't, well, you know, they were here today and gone tomorrow sort of thing, the children were frightfully well educated. Admitted, I did put them into a convent afterwards, but before that they were very well educated. They were practically educated. They had a servant. Admitted, she was an ayah, but my two children could blatter Sindhi long before they could blatter English. And I mean, to this day it holds. German, they can speak German fluently, grammatically, and they blattered away merrily. The five-year-old in Germany, he could speak French and German before he could speak English, because he mixed. I saw five little kids once playing. And one was French, one was German, one was Polish. They were in the mess in Germany, liaison. And all these houses were in the same street. And my kid was in the midst of them, and he was five. And they were all playing together, all in a different language. And they were all understanding exactly what they played. And there was one little girl, she could speak three languages. And my boy, as I say, learned to speak French and German before he spoke correct English. Children are adaptable. And when we finally docked, and then there was still a way to go on the train, imagine a child of my class at the time seeing bananas growing. You imagine a banana tree. Oh, look. Imagine a boat flying across the water with a great big funny sail. What's that? It's a bunderboat. What's a bunderboat? A bunderboat is a native boat. They're already learning, aren't they? You see, the trains were a horror. The trains are right up there. To get down them, you've got to go right up there.
What do you mean? To get into the train? Get into them,
yeah. 6 feet? Yeah, you've got to go up. Well, you've got to go your height to get into these trains. In those days, you're still going 30 years back. I don't know what they're like now. I haven't been back. I want to go, but I haven't been. But these trains, oh boy, they were high up. And of course, you only got half a berth for children. Half a berth for children who were 5 and 7, you didn't get a whole berth for them. You cuddled the baby. It was just one of those things. And when you were travelling up country on these trains with the regiment, having no husband, I had to gallop up to the train with a Dixie and get blue rice pudding and stew and pray that the children hadn't fallen out when I got back. And if they wanted to be sick, they were sick down on the bottom of you. And seasickness in those trains is pretty grim. It really was. But you always had a friend. You always had another woman. It wasn't a civilization like today. You always had help. One helped the other. You never turned a person down. You helped. Automatically, you helped because you knew that you needed it at some time or another. And so other women helped you with your children. A woman who perhaps hadn't got young children took one of yours and helped you. And if you were, but as I saw once, well brought up, and you didn't know how to wash napkins, somebody did it for you and then showed you, but you washed them next time. You see, it was a different world. And
tell me about your first impressions on your arrival in India.
Oh, I thought it was absolutely wonderful. I saw Karachi, and I saw the houses, different white houses. I saw the people, elephantiasis, lepers, people sleeping in the streets, dirt. I saw the children.
But wasn't that upsetting?
At first, you don't take it in. You're in transit. I wasn't staying there. You don't take it in. It's only when you live there you begin to see it. And you'd have to live in a place for a while to see it. I saw it afterwards. But I just looked out of the train window, I remember. I saw houses and palm trees and banana trees and desert. Because don't forget we were on the end of the Sindh Desert, weren't we? And when I saw the Maya Dam, which was a stony old patch of land, and it was away from the cantonment, and it was away from the rest of it. There were only 20 white women there. But the house, to me, it was a palace, an absolute palace. It had 2 rooms for the children and a wide veranda going all the whole length of the bungalow, and it had a garden in front with beautiful trees in it, and flame of the forest, and zinnias. I'll always put zinnias and India together. The Mali only grew zinnias. He could only think of zinnias. But they were so colourful, zinnias and cannas. Of course, I didn't know the names of them then. And this house, there was a dining room, and it had beautiful chintz curtains. My husband had done it all up. And there was a servant sitting out at the back and another servant waiting to greet me. And it was really fantastic. And the Mardam, on the Mardam, they'd made land yachts, the boys had. And they skimmed over the sand and dirt in the land yachts. And, of course, there was tennis. I didn't know how to play tennis. I've never played tennis in my life. And dances. Boy, beautiful dances. But I was a dancer. And then we had 11s in the morning on the veranda. And one of the girls was a beautiful knitter, and she showed me how to adapt. And another of the women was, you know, everybody mixed in there. Everybody. It didn't matter who you were, you mixed in. And, it was really wonderful to hand two kids over to another woman. It really was. I began to like this life. And it was something I had never had before. And I had time to read and time to think and time to learn. I learned to shoot. I nearly learned to ride, but I didn't quite. And I dressed all up one day. This silk shirt was the regulation, jodhpurs, tie. I took one look at this thing. Looked about 15 miles up. And the size said, "It's Tikai, Mem Sahib." And I said, "Oh, yeah? No, thank you." And I went home. And the colonel's wife took that mount and he threw her, so I was very glad, and I never learned after that. I never did learn to ride, but tennis.
How many married families were there?
20. That's all. Just 20 women, but we made our own life.
The trouble with a small group of women like that is if you don't get on, or if you have too much gossiping or something, it can get to be very unpleasant.
No. Nobody was ever... I don't ever remember anybody quarrelling. We fitted in. There were only us. Children quarrelled. But I don't ever in Hyderabad Sindh remember anybody quarrelling. And that sounds a very funny thing to say, because human nature being what it is, but I don't remember. You see, we needed each other. For instance, there was another... You see, there were four batteries, each with a quartermaster sergeant, and each with an RSM, and each with their sergeants, you see, and their quartermasters too. And one woman was absolutely horrified at coming to India. She was a very religious woman. She was an extremely nice woman. She had two children, but she didn't want to come to India. But she came because her husband was there. And she was absolutely petrified of snakes. You mentioned snakes, and she crawled up the wall and died. She did everything to stop snakes coming in the house. For instance, you had a bathroom. Well, it wasn't a bathroom. It was a piece of cement with a little tiny rim round it, and you pulled the water, or you sat in a kind of hip bath and had a bath, you see. But...
Was this inside your house?
Yes, inside the house. And there was a hole in the wall which let the water out. And... because the water you used to drink went through charcoal in a tank outside in the courtyard, but the water you used for bathing came out of the Indus, where everybody, camels, horses, the lot, had a bath. But that was all right for bathing, you see. And, she bunged up the hole there. She put a coir mat down in the front, where a snake is not supposed, in our day, it was said, to go over coir. Didn't like it. And she put everything everywhere. And then one night, we heard a scream. And we knew... See, some of the husbands had to go on duty. And we knew that she was alone. So, of course, we immediately ran. You always did. All the bungalows were joined together, but they had a dividing wall there. So we ran down to her house, and of course it was a snake. She thought of everything, but she didn't think of the roof. And the roof was quite high up and muddy. And in the wet season, you see, the rain came down and the mutty decided to dissolve. And although you had a cloth under it, everything up there, right up there, came down from the roof, where she'd forgotten the roof. And this big black thing, I don't know whether it was bad or not. I never did like snakes, but I only know the crite, and I know that's a bad one. But this black one, oh dear, it had gone under the only chest of drawers she had, you see. And of course she was sitting there absolutely frozen with horror. But I always kept a hockey stick, and we always ran with a hockey stick, and two of us got this snake out and whopped it. Once you break their back, it's all right. I wasn't very thrilled, but... And that's the sort of thing you did. I mean, you helped. My husband did an excellent job one night. I was sitting on the veranda doing some knitting. It was late at night and it was hot. And I heard somebody cry out. And I ran, and it was a little girl bear. And I said, "What happened?" She said, "I trod on a twig." Well, you knew she didn't tread on a twig. And I looked at her foot, and there were the two marks gradually spreading. And I said to my husband, "Hospital," and we put her in the pram, and he ran. In 3 minutes, he crossed a great big mire dam with his child. And there was a very, very nice dark doctor there, Dr. Lawrence. He was married to a white woman, but we'd never seen her. And he got a very great mention in The Lancet, because he did save the child, and it was an equus bite, and they don't very often. In fact, never. And
what kind of bite?
Equus, the snake. It's a little tiny snake, like a whip snake, and it's grey and white, and it's a very nasty snake. In fact, you don't very often live. And my husband saved the child. Well, he just ran with her, let's put it that way. And that was one of the times the mother and that was in the sergeant's mess and left the child with the ayah, but the child had wandered off the veranda, you see. And she was about 6 or 7. But things like that you sort of took in your stride. And fruit, you always washed the fruit in Permang. A couple of crystals and it's clear as anything. I always put my mosquito nets down myself. I didn't leave them to my... my servants, because although I had the servants and they were there to do it, I didn't believe in it. I wanted my children to be well looked after, and I did have a very, very, very good ayah. I did. She was the envy of everybody. But I still looked after my children. I think that stemmed from one time when I asked the boy to cook me a quick meal. Boiled eggs, green peas, and potatoes. And I had never been out into the kitchen then, because I thought natives were natives and I was still very green and very English. And although I got lots of advice from people who'd lived there quite long, I thought I knew it all. And the kitchen was way down the end of a covered runway because of the kite hawks coming down and taking your meal as you whipped it into the dining room, you see. Anyway, for some reason or another, I went out into the kitchen. Oh dear. I learned the hard way. There were cockroaches running all around everywhere, but that was all right. That was fair enough. But he had the boiled eggs, the tin of peas with the label on, and the potatoes, all in one pot. And he was about to make a cup of tea with the water. That stopped me in flight, and ever after then I checked. You know, I didn't nose, I checked. And I explained. And I was in very great disgrace the second week I was in India, because I scrubbed the toilet Well, you didn't do that. A castless man scrubbed the toilet. You never touched the toilet. I mean, you could see him walking along with all the pots on his head. He cleared it from a back slot.
It wasn't a water closet.
No, it was... Oh, no, you had no water. It was a box, like a commode, and you sat on it, and he moved the toilet pan from a little door at the back. And, of course, I went and scrubbed the seat and everything, and I was, oh, dear me. Oh. But, no, I loved India.
Did you need to make any improvements in your home?
No, none at all, none whatsoever. The stuff was issued, and it was a better issue than in England, simply and solely because you had to have it. I did have to do one thing. My first night in India, in Hyderabad, Sindh, was very bad. I don't like mice. And I don't like rats. I'm very, very afraid of them. I never have liked them, and I've never been able to cope with them. They're the one things I am afraid of. Other than that, I'm not afraid of anything, but that I was. And my first night in India, our bungalow was next door to a shop where they made things, a carpenter's shop. And my first night in India, I kept hearing ping, 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 ping on the beds. Now, the beds in India were much better than the beds in England. They had sort of springs to them. And I woke up my husband and I said, we had separate beds, of course. Something's making a noise here. Whatever is it? Oh, he said, I expect it's the rats, and went back to sleep, you see. And they were walking around the end of my bed. But the mosquito net was tucked in, but I was all terrified. And I sorted that one out afterwards. We had a mongoose. But things like that, no, there was nothing we needed to do in the bungalow. It was absolutely perfect. It was so lovely. It was another world from England. It really was beautiful. And when we made friends, we could go to their houses and we learned a different way of life, you know, a really nice way of life. And then, of course, you learn to play tennis and you learn to play chess and you learn to play bridge. Things that didn't come in my curriculum.
Why did you have single beds?
Because of the heat, I think, more than anything. And the bugs. And every once a week, there was a great big tank outside on the Mayadam. And the boys put the beds in there and boiled them because of the bugs. You got bugs anyway. You see, the ceilings were so high that insects and birds and everything nested in the fans. I mean, it was nothing to be drinking some soup and woof. And you had a cloth over it. Well, that encouraged everybody and everything. This stretched cloth, you see, but you did have an electric fan. It went round and round and made a noise. Didn't have a fan on the veranda. But the veranda was all paved, and the garden was outside, and at night, the smell of the flowers. Oh, you could sit on the veranda, and you could smell the flowers from miles away. And they had special little chimneys in the bazaar where the wind came down. And when the wind came up at night, of course you did have the sand, and you had sandstorms where everything got covered. In fact, it piled up in the door. But it was beautiful. And the Marleys did the church garden and the sergeant's mess garden, and they were all plants in tubs. And the nights, the sunsets, and the beautiful dawns, because we were always up at dawn, because you slept in the afternoon from about 2 till about 4 with just a towel over it. It was 120, so it was pretty hot, you see. But you were always up at dawn playing tennis. I mean, you were playing tennis at 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning, and you were dancing till gone midnight. It was just...
If you had somebody to do the gardening, somebody to look after the children, somebody to do the cooking, what did you do with yourself during that time?
Oh, we made things. We had a cricket club. We had a rifle club that the colonel did. We had a revolver club. The officers' wives had a session now and again. And you all got together and you knitted cricket sweaters and you knitted all the children's things. And sometimes you made your own clothes. You know, I made beautiful undies and I embroidered undies, you know, things like that. And then you'd have a bridge party. And in the morning, you all had 11s. Some had somebody in, somebody else. And, of course, you weren't supposed to. I did. You went to the bazaar on your bike, or you went to the cantonment, or I visited my friends. The others didn't, but I had some Anglo-Indian friends. And I visited them, and then we'd go out shooting. Or we'd go out shooting pig at night, or we'd go down the river, or we'd go to one of my friends' houses, who perhaps was a Muslim or a Hindi or something, and he'd have a rose garden. Oh, two rose gardens, the smell of the roses, it was fantastic. And you filled your days in like that. There's one thing we did learn in India that I've often laughed about. We had books sent over from home, you know, Woman's Weekly and Woman's World, all the things that came out then. And you know what? We read the advertisements. And that's how we, you know, we read those books. You don't read them now. We read them. And we used to cut out all the flowers and find a way of copying flowers onto tracing paper to put them onto embroidery. And then, of course, the carpet waller used to come. And the carpet waller would put all the carpets down on the veranda and hope you'd buy a Persian carpet, which you did in the end. The blighter, he knew.